Shuz Rabbi Neuberger, Rabbi Pruzansky, Rabbi Cohn, many other very special Rabbanim, as the Rav mentioned. Of course, Brishos Chaim's family. It's a very overwhelming schus to try to share some reflections, some words of Torah, and some words of inspiration. Leilei Nishmas, one of my dearest friends, my dear brother-in-law, Alav Shalom, Chaim Yisachar ben Yechiel Zedel Dov. You know, for those of us who have, those of us who have a personal connection to Chaim, so it's very obvious that not a day goes by without thinking about Chaim, without trying to continue to carry on his Hashkafas HaChaim, the things that he believed in, the things that he represented in such a real way. And for those here, and there are some people here, who didn't know Chaim or didn't know Chaim well, it's chaval that you aren't zocha to have more of a relationship with such a special human being, such a special Jew. And I hope that in some way tonight, I want to be able not just to give a shiur, but to try to share a little bit of the legacy of Chaim, a little bit of the message that Chaim lived with, and even in the most difficult times struggled with. You know, for the last number of years, the community has been zocha to have very, very special, renowned speakers, world-renowned speakers, great Torah personalities, to come and to speak and to share inspiration and to share reflections and to try to offer something in a way of chizik to our entire community. And tonight you're stuck, as the Rav alluded to, with a local. With someone who's here merely more by a familial connection than by anything else. But there is one thing that I think I have that, again, unfortunately, the speakers of the last couple of years, they weren't zochet have. And that is that I was an insider into Chaim's world. And I knew the things that Chaim thought about. We shared many of the same dreams, both personally, individually, in terms of our hopes and dreams with the community at large. And I want, again, to try in some small way to share a little bit, through the words of Torah, but to share a little bit of a slice of a very, very big life. The life of Chaim Yisachar. And needless to say, it's not so easy to try to fill that void. Rav Huttner, the great Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Yitzchak Huttner, in the Pachad Yitzchak, in the Igros Pachad Yitzchak, they have recorded a beautiful memorial essay that Rav Huttner penned, Leilei Nishmas Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. And in that Maimer Zikaron, as he refers to it, he says it's not a hesped. Rav Huttner didn't feel himself worthy to give a hesped for Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Mir Rosh Yeshiva. He describes how when we look at Klal Yisrael, there's different ways to look at Klal Yisrael. You can look at Klal Yisrael as a number of parts that come together to form a whole. But he says that's not really the authentic way to look at Klal Yisrael. The true way to look at Klal Yisrael, he says, is to see initially a whole that happens to then be broken up into parts. You know, he describes it almost like a puzzle. Right? That there's this singular picture that exists, and then it's broken into smaller parts to eventually come and be snapped back together. And Rav Huttner, in his beautiful style, in his beautiful poetic style, influenced by his Rebbe and by Rav Kook and so many others, Rav Huttner describes how there are certain Jews who, so to speak, represent larger puzzle pieces, and there are certain Jews who represent smaller puzzle pieces. And again, it's all part of a wholesome puzzle. It's all part of one picture. That's the right way to look at it. It's one big picture that happens to, for a period of time, be broken apart into smaller pieces. But I think, again, any of us who knew Chaim, any of us who know Chaim, we understand very well that Chaim was one of the bigger puzzle pieces in that beautiful puzzle of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, we try to fill that void that's been left in this beautiful, wholesome picture that the Jewish people represent. That big, gaping hole that was left when we lost Chaim. And it's a lot of achrayis. And I want to speak about that achrayis, and I want to try to share some of that message that Chaim represented, that each of us, in some small way, Some of us may be bigger puzzle pieces, some of us smaller puzzle pieces, but to be able to fill in that gap. That those of us who knew Chaim should continue to remember him, to remember what he believed in, to remember what he lived with, to remember what he thought about, what he dreamt about. And for those of us who didn't know Chaim, to get a taste, a little bit, of who he was and what his message was. So I want to begin with a story that I know Chaim would have loved. It's a Chassidus Shemaisa, a very cryptic one. Not unlike many great Hasidic tales, it doesn't have some supernatural ending. There's no mo-face that takes place. Something miraculous, sudden turn of events. It's a very, very Pashut story. But I think its simplicity is it's godless. The story goes as follows. You know, there's a tzaddik who passed away in the mid-1800s. Rav Shmuel Abba of Slavita. So Shmuel Abba was a grandson of Rav Pinchas of Karetz. Pinchas Karetz was one of the early Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov. And he once described an afternoon visit to the home of the Saragora Rebbe. Now the Rebbe of Saragora was the son of Rabbi Yisrael of Rizhin, the great Rabbi Yisrael of Rizhner, who was known to live in a very royal fashion. He wanted to restore some of the honor, the splendor, the glory of Klal Yisrael. And the Rizhner literally lived in a palace, which was a very unusual hanhaga in Avodas Hashem. He had a carriage that was drawn by white horses. He had diamond-studded boots. He wanted to elevate the glory of Klal Yisrael, the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the glory of the Shekhinah. So his son, one of the many sons of the Rizhner Rebbe who went on to form their own Hasidic dynasties, the Rebbe of Saragora, once hosted the grandson of Rav Pinchas Karetzer, again, a tzaddik in his own right, Rav Shmuel Abba of Slavita, hosted him for an afternoon, and they sat down to drink a cup of coffee together. And the Rebbe of Saragora, again in the style of Rizhin, brought out his beautiful golden cart, with the beautiful golden cups, and he poured a steaming hot cup of coffee, and he served it to his esteemed guests, and they sat, and they were drinking, and they were talking and learning, and talking in Avodas Hashem. And as this Rav Shmuel Abba is sitting on this cup of coffee, he turns to the Rebbe of Saragora, and he says to him, you know, your coffee is very good. It's very nice, this beautiful golden cup, this whole atmosphere. He says, but this is not the best cup of coffee I ever had in my life. Let me tell you about the best cup of coffee I ever had in my life. The greatest cup of coffee I had ever in my entire life was when I had just become a chassan. And I went with my father and my father-in-law. We went to the Rebbe Reb Zusha, the famous Reb Zusha of Anapoli, who lived in not a palace, to say the least. And he says, we came to do Shimush Talmidei Chacham. That's what my future father-in-law told me. To be Meshamish Talmidei Chacham. We came to the home of Rebbe Zusha. And we walked in. It was one of these, you know, types of home that if you knock too hard on the door falls off its hinges. Rav Zusha lived in a little hut somewhere in a forest. And we came to his home, and Rav Zusha greeted us with such a warm smile. And he turned to his rabbits and he said, put up a pot of coffee for our guests. And she comes back a few minutes later, and they're sitting there on these dilapidated chairs, on this little wobbly table. And she comes out with this tiny little rusty kettle, little coffee pot. And Rizusha, you can see, he's starting to think. He says, we don't have any cups. He says, all I have is this little coffee kettle, and I have this one little plate, this one little saucer. And Rizusha says, but I have an idea. And this Rav Shmuel Abba of Slavita described to the Rebbe of Saragora how the Rebbe of Rizusha took the lid off the coffee pot and poured some coffee into the lid of the coffee pot and gave it to my father-in-law. And then he poured some of the coffee onto that little saucer and handed it very lovingly to my father. And then the Rebbe Reb Zusha was mechabed me with drinking right out of the kettle. And he turned to the Rebbe of Saragora and he said, I want to thank you for your hospitality. I want to thank you for the fine imported coffee that you're serving me in this golden mug, this golden cup. He said, but it doesn't compare to that cup of coffee that I shared years ago with the Rebbe Reb Zusha. It's a lot of levels of interpretation. The story is not explained in the Svarim that bring it. But when I think about this story, I think about my relationship with Chaim. Now, what was my relationship with Chaim? I don't think we ever had a cup of coffee. I don't know, did Chaim drink coffee? I only started drinking coffee the last 2 years. We never shared a cup of coffee together. But there's something about that image of the Rebbe Reb Zusha sitting with his guests around the table, drinking coffee in a in a strange and almost silly way. And it reminds me of the simplicity, the depth and the simplicity of my friendship, my relationship with Chaim. You know, much of our experiences together wasn't like the Sadegor Rebbe's palace. Nothing too glamorous, too glorious. Fair share of ridiculousness, that's for sure. Nothing too extravagant. We never went on exotic trips together. It was very plain, it was very simple. Although one of my fondest memories was pretty glorious. Think about the time that we had the schus, we used to play music together, we were in a band together. And one year, Yeshiva University invited our band to be on the float at the Israeli Day Parade. And I just remember such a vision. And making our way down Fifth Avenue, middle of New York City, and people lining the sides, waving their Israeli flags. And I remember Chaim at one point said, we should sing Reb Shlomo's, Reb Shlomo Karlov's Ad Yerhu. And it was such a moment. It could be it's all made up in my head at this point, but I just remember, you know, here we were, such a strange thing, going down Fifth Avenue, and Alan Chaim's pumping his fist at the crowd, and little old ladies with their Israeli flags. And there was something very, very messianic about it, very Googledic about it. I think even the Neturei Kartach ever got into it a little bit. That was Chaim, that was his overflowing love. I captivated people. But a lot of our relationship was not the Sadegor Rebbe's palace. It was Pashut things. It was a Pashut Chavrusa, learning Torah together. It was davening together, it was a Shal Shudas together. It was a Yom Tov together. It was all the regular things that Jewish people, Baruch Hashem, are blessed to do. But when you did it with Chaim, when we served to you by Chaim, it was served in a different way. It had its own special flavor, had its own special smile, like the Rebbe Reb Zushin when he served that cup of coffee. He didn't have much, but he served it with such a warmth, such a depth, a flavor. It was a flavor to the way that Chaim lived his life. Lubavitcher Rebbe, who Chaim was very fond of, was asked by his father-in-law, the Rebbe Rayatz, the previous Rebbe. This goes back to before Menachem Mendel Schneerson was Rebbe. He asked him in 1942, 1943, Tavshin Gimel, to prepare a calendar for the coming year. And in this calendar would spell out the Lubavitcher Hasidim schedule, Chitas, little Chumash every day, Tehillim, Tanya. And then every day would record something memorable, something that happened in history on that particular date, a yard site, a birthday, an important event. And occasionally, or maybe more often than not, right, some type of Hasidic dictum or statement or inspirational short story. It was compiled 1942, 1943, a little volume called Hayom Yom. And it was never rewritten for the subsequent years, but it was reprinted many, many times throughout the generations. Baba Cherubi's Hayom Yom, a tiny little book that contained a tremendous amount of inspiration. Chaim was, like I said, a big puzzle piece. It's a shtickle Lubavitcher. I'd be proud to know he was quoting Lubavitcher Rebbe. A little bit of a Breslover, a little bit of a Belzer, the family tradition. So I wanted to share with you an entry from the Hayom Yom Chavtes Nisan, again from that year 1943. The Rebbe wrote as follows. The introduction to Likutei Torah on three parshios is the mimer which begins to understand the matter of the godly soul. Quotes a pasuk, it is written, you shall not eat. B'chulu. This mimer was originally said by the Alter Rebbe to the Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek repeated the mimer in the Alter Rebbe's presence, Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the founder of Chabad, who then said to him, nu, and the flavoring? He said the mimer, but nu, what's with the flavoring? The Tzemach Tzedek then wrote a transcript of the Maimer with parenthetical notes. The Alter Rebbe reviewed and corrected the transcript and ordered that the parenthetical notes be entered as part of the body of the Maimer text. You could say the Maimer, you could teach the idea, you could do that particular mitzvah or act of Avodas Hashem. But then there's still sometimes a feeling of, and what's with the flavoring? Where's the flavor? Where's the flavor of that tefillah? Where's the flavor of that Yom Tov? Where's the flavor of that Shabbos? And the Tzemach Tzedek knew exactly what the Alter Rebbe was talking about. And he rewrote it. He rewrote the Maamar and he added his Haggadahs on the side. He added his little footnotes, his notes along the way. And the Alter Rebbe reviewed it and he said, no, you have to put it into the text. It's part of that becomes part of the primary text. When I think about Chaim, I think about someone who provided the flavor in Avodas Hashem. He added a flavor to life. He brought a certain energy to the things that he did. There was a flavor to his Torah. There was a flavor to his tefillah. There was a flavor to his Shabbos, to his Yom Tov. And I think that's the pshat in the story of the Rebbe Reb Zusha's coffee. It's not that the Rebbe Reb Zusha had some special ingredient that he put into his coffee. If anything, the Sadagur Rebbe had all of the outer trappings of what made for a good cup of coffee. But there was something that the Rebbe Reb Zusha was able to inject into that coffee. Even with the rusty tea, even with the rusty kettle, even with the lack of kalim to properly serve the coffee, there was a special flavor that made it unique, that made it different. And it was the same thing with Chaim. There was a certain naturalness in his Avodas Hashem that it didn't seem forced. It didn't seem like he was trying to add a new ingredient. It was something that was just natural from his overflowing heart. My wife was telling me today, she met someone earlier today, talking a little bit, reminiscing about Chaim. And this person said they remember Chaim from his younger years. And she said, you know, when Chaim would do something Jewish, it was cool. And sometimes there's a lot of peer pressure for a young person. It doesn't always feel you fit in, that it's cool to do Jewish things. When Chaim would daven, it was cool to daven. There was a certain naturalness. There was a certain hashpa that he had, a certain way of flavoring the things that he did that were so inspiring to people, that captivated people, that made people want to be a little bit more like Chaim. The Mishnah tells us, Chazal tells us at the end of Maseches Menachos, Echad amarbe v'echad amamit uvavad sheyachav in libo l'shamayim. A person could do a lot, a person could do a little in this world. The main thing is that a person should be mechavin in his heart, to do the best he can, and to be mechavin his lev, to make sure that the intention, that the kavanah's halev, is in the right place. Just as Shabbos, past Shabbos, we read about the Isser of Pigul. Pigul, to put it simply, you have a Kohen who's performing an Avodah in Beis HaMikdash, he has a Karban, and he could end up disqualifying the Karban if his Kavanah is not in the right place. If his mind's not where it needs to be. He has intention for the wrong time, for the wrong place, and all of a sudden an offering to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, a Karban, a dedication to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, all of a sudden no longer is such an offering. It's possible, it becomes disqualified. And if you look at the Svar now, he seems to be alluding to this, and many other Svarim allude to this as well, that the idea of Pigul is that it's not enough to just serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the outer trappings. It's not enough to do all the right actions if the Kavanah Salev is not in the right place. If our Torah is lifeless, if it's lacking that emotional connection, if it's not a Torah S'chaim, a living Torah, which it is, which it needs to be, and we have an achrayis to guard the Torah in that way, to make sure that our mind is connected properly to the Torah and our heart is connected properly to the Torah. Because you could serve up the most expensive karban with the most expensive, again, outer trappings, the most delicious cup of coffee and the most beautiful cup. But if it's not served with a certain depth of genuine goodness, then something could be lacking. Then the whole offering and everything that you're trying to create can be possible. So I think we have to ask ourselves the following question. And this is the question that Chaim would ask me often, sometimes openly, sometimes not openly stated, but it was something we always worked on together. And that is to ask ourselves at various points in life, when we're doing the right things, when we're going through the right motions, and we're living a life, hopefully, externally at least, of Torah and mitzvos, but to challenge ourselves, to make sure, are we feeling connected to the inner beauty of Torah? Are we feeling connected to that inner kavana of what Torah is supposed to be? Are we growing in our Avodas Hashem? Chaim was a Jew who was always growing. Are we inspired in our Avodas Hashem? Or Chas v'Shalom, are we just taking the peel, so to speak, of what it means to be a Jew and throwing away the fruit, leaving ourselves with just the outer trappings of what it means, or what it could be, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to embrace the Torah Tzchai? The Gemara in Brachos on Daf Zayin Amud Beis says that a name tells us a lot about the essence of something. Rabbi Yochanan says, Minolan, how do we know? Dishmei Garim, how do you know that a name causes something, that a person's name contains within it a certain spiritual energy, a certain expression of the mahus, of that person, of that entity? Adam Arishon had an uncanny ability to identify, to recognize the kochos ha-nefesh of the different animals, to be able to inject it with its mission in this world. And parents, when they name a child, the Arizal says, have a degree of Ruach HaKodesh, that a parent is able to somehow capture the essence of that Jewish neshama and to be able to transmit it, whether they realize it or not. When I think about Chaim, and I think about his name Chaim, there's a pasuk that always comes to mind. And it's a pasuk that we just read a couple parshios ago, in parshas Achrei Mos. Ushmartim es chukosai ves mishpatai esher yase osama adam v'chai bahem ani Hashem. Why do I think about this pasuk when I think about Chaim? V'chai bahem ani Hashem. Yes, of course, I still hear the sound of people who knew him well, always calling him Chai. I hear the name. I think about Chai, Rashi Tevos, Chaim Yisachar, alludes to his name. But more than that, I think about this pasuk as being an expression of the whole attitude of who Chaim was. What does it mean? What's the Torah telling us? What's the Kadosh Baruch Hu telling us when he says, guard my mitzvos, keep my mishpatim, perform Torah and mitzvos, v'chai bahem ani Hashem, and live by them. And to live a life of Torah and mitzvos. What does it mean, v'chai bahem? So there's a beautiful explanation from the Chiddush HaRim, the first Ger Rabbi. The Ger Rabbi says, there were great tzaddikim who came before me, who had a very deep interpretation of this pasuk, but I have a deeper interpretation of this pasuk. The Chiddush HaRim said, some interpret v'chai bahem as an obligation, as a command, as a heavenly suggestion, if you will, from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, to try to inject into your Avodas Hashem some chiyus. To try to bring some energy, some enthusiasm, some fervor, some passion. V'chai bahem, try to put some life into your Torah and mitzvahs. Try not to be stale in your Avodas Hashem. Chiddush HaRim said that's a true interpretation. And the word tzaddikim who came before me who said such an interpretation, the Shalach Kadosh. The Holy Shalach Kadosh, the Shnei Luchos Habris. The Shalach Kadosh writes that way, many others write that way. It's a true interpretation. And it's true even in Pnimius of Torah, in a deeper dimension of Torah. It goes beyond the Pshat of the Torah. But he says, I want to tell you the true, deepest interpretation of what V'chai Bahem means. And the Chiddush HaRim said the following. The shortcoming of that interpretation, to say V'chai Bahem means to do mitzvos with a dose of enthusiasm, of fervor, of passion, means that there's still me. And then there's the Torah and mitzvos. The Torah stands off to the side, and now I'm going to engage in Torah and mitzvos, and I'm being asked, give something of yourself to the Torah and mitzvos. Don't do it without any heart, don't do it without any passion. Try to inject some of your chiyus, some of your life, into that Torah, into that mitzvah, into that tefillah. But the Chiddush HaRim said, that's not the deeper pshat. The deeper pshat of a chai bahem is that a person should become so deeply attached to whatever aspect of Avodas Hashem he's involved in that particular moment, that v'chai bahem, that it becomes his entire life. It's not that there's an independent human being, and tangential to him, there's a mitzvah, there's an opportunity, an act of chesed, a tefillah, and he's being asked to give of himself for that mitzvah. Says the Chiddush HaRim, Hainu, what does v'chai bahem really mean? Shekol chiyuso yeh mitorah u'mitzvah se'avodas Hashem yisparta. My whole life, that everything I am, the definition of who I am, my chayim, my life is defined by my Torah and mitzvos, my Avodas Hashem. Sheba'em ezeu ikar achiyah shel adam. After all, this is the true living in the life of a Jew. V'lulei zeh ein lo chiyas klal. And besides from that, everything else is the outer trappings. This, the gift of Torah, the gift of mitzvos, that's my chiyas, that's my life. Not that I independently exist and I'm being asked again to try to give of myself for Torah and mitzvos. That's level one. But level two, to become one with the Torah and mitzvahs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given to us. To really live, ki heim chayenu v'orech emeinu, that the mitzvahs are my chiyas. That's who I am. That's who I want to be. That's my entire essence. And I'm absorbed and I'm filled with mitzvahs. He says an amazing thing. The Chiddush HaRim says, this plays itself out even in matters of halacha. We know from the Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Chafei, that a person who's osek b'mitzvah is pater in a mitzvah. A person who's involved in one particular mitzvah is exempt from performing a different mitzvah. Why is that so? The Chiddush Rambam says, because if I'm really being osik in the mitzvah the way that I should, if I've given my entire self, if I've placed my entire self within that particular mitzvah that I'm performing at that moment, so there's nothing left of me to give to another mitzvah. And therefore, osik b'mitzvah patur min mitzvah. Ki heim chayenu v'orech yameinu. He even goes so far as to say that the reason we say, Elokai neshama Hashem, please restore my soul, after we say Birchas HaTorah, maybe before, depending on different practices, but the reason that Elokai neshama Hashem, please give me life again, has to be said in conjunction with Birchas HaTorah, is because if I'm really investing myself in Torah, that's taking over my entire life, and I have to ask for life again. I don't have anything more to give. Because I've given everything of myself to Shabbos, and to Yom Tov, and to Tefillah, and to everything. And Chaim was that type of person. For myself, Chaim was a spiritual alarm clock that always challenged me to give more of myself to Torah and Mitzvahs, to give more of myself to Shabbos, to give more of myself to Tefillah, to make it more a part of who I am. And again, therefore, I think as we come to Chaim's fourth Yahrzeit, to be able to think about this, the greatest way to continue the legacy and to continue to think about that void, that missing puzzle piece, in the lives of every one of us in Klal Yisrael, is to ask ourselves, am I doing this? Am I living a life of a Chaim? Am I thinking about a Kodesh Baruch Hu? Chaim's Amuna magnet was a lot more than a magnet. It was an hugga in life. It was an attitude to what it means to be a Jew. Someone was saying earlier today that they were, you know, it used to be you drive locally, New Jersey, a little bit in New York, you'd see a few cars with an Amuna magnet on the back. And then you meet people, you're driving, you're in Baltimore, you're in Florida, you're out on the West Coast, and all of a sudden you're on a highway and you see an Amuna magnet. And you see that Chaim is trying to remind Jews that wherever you go, that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And I walk with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and I live with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that relationship is real. It's not theoretical. It's something that becomes who I am. It's v'chai b'hem. It's what I'm living with. It's what I'm focusing on. It was just very recently the first Yahrzeit of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. And Rav Aaron was also, in his own way, a very, 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 very deep thinker, a very deeply connected Jew. Maybe he didn't have all of the Hasidic language that Chaim loves so much. But I want to share a small piece of an essay from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. It was published in a volume a couple of years ago by his light. And he describes one of the challenges that faces our community. And I think many of us associate with the community that Rav Aaron's describing here. And he writes as follows. What is the danger lurking at the door of this community? Or what is the need to be particularly wary because its inclination lies in that direction? What are the challenges that face us, dedicated, committed Jews, Torah observant Jews? What's the challenge that faces us? I believe that the sin lurking at the door of the centrist Orthodox or religious Zionist community, the danger which confronts us and of which we must be fully aware, is precisely the danger of shechacha, forgetfulness. Unlike other communities, this is a community which is not so susceptible to Avodah Zarah in its extension, attitudes of the Rambam battled against, such as superstition and gross or primitive conceptions of God, because it is more sophisticated intellectually, religiously, and philosophically. Unfortunately, however, it is very, very susceptible, our community is very, very susceptible to extended shechacha, lacking the imminent sense of God felt so deeply, keenly, and pervasively in other parts of the halachically committed Jewish world. The centrist Orthodox community is one to which the danger of distance from God, the 18th century danger, the danger of a certain spiritual hollowness, of apathy, of pushing God off into the corners, is indigenous and endemic. In short, what's Rav Aaron saying? That there's a danger of not living a life of a Chai B'Hem. That there's a danger that a person gets so into a routine, Baruch Hashem, a beautiful routine, of being an Orthodox Jew who practices Torah and mitzvos, that unfortunately we slip into a certain superficiality in our Avodas Hashem. That the religious commitment that we've all made, and we continue to work on, we continue to try to make, right, is something that's lacking some of that inner flavor that makes Yiddishkeit so special and so real. That makes the Kadosh Baruch Hu so imminent, as Rav Aaron said, in our lives. And Chaim was always challenging me. And Chaim was always challenging himself. And I can assure you that if Chaim was standing here right now, if Chaim was still able, in the way that he was, when he was with us, to make an impact in our community, There's no question in my mind that Chaim, in his own unique way, with his own unique flavor, with his gentle touch and his warm smile, Chaim would be challenging us to ask the same question. Are we deeply connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Are we living with a sense of imminence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our life? Are we feeling a sense of v'chai b'hem, a certain chiyus that comes from every time we have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Are we able to say kihem chayenu v'orech emeinu and to mean it in a very deep and real way? Or chas v'shalom, are we allowing Torah and mitzvahs to be something tangential to the self that stands apart from Torah and mitzvahs? And I don't want you to get me wrong. The outer track of Torah and mitzvahs, the years of shuffling in and out of shul, and coming to a Yom Tov, and coming to a Shabbos, right? And just doing what it means to do Torah and mitzvahs is a beautiful thing. But it's not the level of a chayba. It's not the higher level that Kadosh Baruch Hu is looking for. It's not the inner kavana that Kadosh Baruch Hu is seeking and demanding of us. And the challenge is to make sure that Yiddishkeit becomes something that we are and not something that we do. There's a beautiful line. Shlomo Freifeld, one time there were some Bali Tshuva, they had just, newly observant Jews, they had just finished some learning for the first time, they were making a siyum for the first time. And there was tremendous excitement. And they asked Shlomo Freifeld, founder of the Shariyashiv Yeshiva, to share some words, and he got up. And he quoted from one of Winston Churchill's famous speeches during the Blitzkrieg, where he spoke to the people of England. And Freifeld paraphrased from that speech, from Churchill's speech, when he told the people of England, wherever you are, remember one thing, you are England. Remember that you are England. And Freifeld turned to these Jews, who had recently had their neshama lit, so to speak. That they had become excited, they had become interested, they had set new levels of expectations for themselves. And Freifeld turned to those Talmidim and he said to them, remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, you are Yiddishkeit. You are Yiddishkeit. Not just you do Yiddishkeit, not just you practice Torah and mitzvos, but to become Yiddishkeit, to become Torah and mitzvos, to be worthy not just of being someone who serves Hashem, but being worthy of the title Eved Hashem. Yismach Moshe v'matnas chalko ki Eved ne'eman karasalo. That he wasn't just someone who was doing for Hashem, but he earned the title of Eved Hashem. He had become it. To remember, you are Yiddishkeit. To be Yiddishkeit. The Rav mentioned Chaim's emails from the hospital. If you haven't chazed them over, if you've never seen them, it's a Musar Sefer in and of itself. And I want to share one of my favorite emails from Chaim. It's a tiny email, less than 50 words long. And it's classic Chaim in every sense. He titled it, Little Note. This is from February 16th, 2012. Hey everyone. Today in the hospital, someone gave me such a beautiful compliment I just had to share. She said, Mark, that was Chaim's English name. She said, Mark, you have a really beautiful heart. Anyone who knew Chaim knew that Chaim had a very beautiful, very profound heart. Granted, she was doing an echocardiogram on me. But I appreciated it nonetheless. Good Shabbos, good Purim, Chaim Yisachar, parentheses, Mark Stephen. Why is this classic Chaim? On the surface, there's a lot of shtick going on here. And for all the greatness, for as big as Chaim was, he was a very real, down-to-earth, fun person. A person who could make a joke in such a setting. And there was a lot that he was alluding to in that way here. But there's also that realization of what it means to have a Jewish heart. The Chaim understood that the same way that doctor was looking and analyzing and checking his heart, right? There's a doctor, there's the Rofei Chobasar Mafil Asos, there's the doctor on high, there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the spiritual doctor is checking Jewish hearts. And he wants us to realize that we have a beautiful heart. And he wants us to nurture that beautiful heart. And he wants us to use that heart as an expression of V'chai Behem. To come to that inwardness that shapes and defines what it means to be a Jew. To become Yiddishkeit, like Rav Freifeld told. It was Balei Tshuva at that Siyum. This time of the year, Sfiras HaOmer, is a really, really good time, I think, for all of us to ask that question. Right? To look at our hearts, to look at our Avodas Hashem, at a time when we're growing, we're looking upwards towards Kabbalah Satorah. And it's dafka during Sfiras HaOmer. Because Sfiras HaOmer lacks some of the outer excitement, the outer trappings, the Sadegura Rebbe's cup of coffee, so to speak. Sfiras HaOmer is a very quiet time on a certain level. It's in between the illuminated and exalted night of the Leil Seder. We're on our way to Kabbalah Torah, to stand by Shavuos. And now we're in that long stretch, that long and quiet Chodesh Iyar stretch, which is not so illuminated, not so shining. Doesn't seem to offer us much by way of expression in Yiddishkeit. And yet the month of Iyar is called Chodesh Ziv, which means that it is shining, and that it is illuminated. And it's illuminated in a deep kind of way. Sviras HaOmer, the Svarim explain, Usvartem Lachem, which literally means count for yourself, as we all do. But Usvartem is also a lashon of sapir, of sapphire, to be illuminated, to be shining. Usvartem Lachem is a challenge to ignite oneself, to light oneself. In Iyar? And the answer is yes, in Iyar. Because if you think Yiddishkeit is only about those grandiose moments like the Leil Seder, or the excitement of Kabbalah Satorah when we come to Shavuos, right? Those are easy to feel the presence of a Kadosh Baruch. But it's finding a Kadosh Baruch in those subtleties, in those smaller details, in those little internal steps that we take over the course of Sfiras HaOmer, which really allow a Jew to light himself up and to come to Kabbalah Satorah in a way that's worthy. There's a tefillah that we say during the days of Sfiras HaOmer. Many people say, after you count Sfira, the beautiful Ribono Shel Olam, connecting to the different Sfiros, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He gave us a gift, a mitzvah of Sfira. And one of the lines that we say in that tefillah is that we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the mitzvah of Sfira, which was given to us kedei l'taharenu miklipasenu. Sfira was given to us in order to purify us from a klipa, from a shell, from a spiritual husk, if you will. Right? From the outer trapping, so to speak, of what it means to be a Jew. And sometimes those outer trappings, again, are so beautiful and so exalted and so illuminated, again, like the Seder night, which is where the whole sphere process begins. But over the course of the sphere, we're saying, we're chipping away, we're refining ourselves, we're moving away some of that spiritual dross that's collected upon our souls. Kedei l'taharenu miklipasenu. I saw a beautiful remez, the base Aaron of Karlin. He says, Usvartem lachem. The essence of the Usvartem lachem, he says, lachem, the word lachem is Rashi Tevos, kedei l'taharenu miklipasenu. That's what Sfira is about. It's removing the outer trapping, so to speak, to come back to the essential Jewish self. To come back to that inner world of the beauty of Torah and mitzvos. One of my students told me a couple of years ago, beautiful thought, why it is that the Jewish people have a practice not to listen to music during Sfiras HaOmer. He said, it could be the reason we don't listen to music, the reason that we're asked to turn down the outside music, so to speak, during the days of Sfiras HaOmer is because there's an inner music that's also being sung. There's a song of the neshama that wants to express itself, and sometimes it's being drowned out, so to speak, by all of the outer noise, by all of the outer sounds, by all of the songs of others that surround us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Chodesh Iyar, Sfiras HaOmer, Usfartem Lachem, Kedei L'Taharenu Miklipasenu, to ignite oneself once again, to turn inward, and to listen to your own song. To hear the song that the neshama is trying to sing. To allow the neshama to soar again. And to express itself from inside of the body that's sometimes so weary and so tired. And become so mechanical in its avodas Hashem. The Zohar Kadosh says that there are three things that are really one. Kutchevrichu Yisrael v'arayis achadu. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Jewish people, and the Torah are all one. What do they share in common? The Torah is a Torah Chaim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is an Elohim Chaim, is a living God. And Klal Yisrael, against all odds, in the strangest of ways, is still the nation that impacts the world more than anyone else. Am Yisrael Chai, which is another song Chaim sang on that epic day down Fifth Avenue. To recognize that there's a chiyus, there's a v'chai b'hem that a Jew has to live with. And it's hard, it's not an easy thing. But to challenge ourselves every now and again to make sure that inner flame is still burning bright. Probably one of the times of the year that I think about Chaim most is around the Yom Nora. Yom Kippur time, see Chaim in his kittel, big white gartel, it's a chazan. I know some of the people in the room have had the opportunity over the last number of years to be a part of the very special Slichos. The last couple of years it's been in the social hall of B'nai Yeshurin. People get together for a very unique type of Slichos. Started 7 years ago, Tavshin Samach Tes. And who was the chazan that first year? Who injected that flavor into the slichos? It started off in the basement of the home of the Stokars 50, young men or so getting together on that first Motzei Shabbos of Slichos, and Chaim led us with such a fervor and such a passion. And then we outgrew that space, we moved across the street to Dr. Friedman and Esther. There for a couple years, we opened the women's section, 100 people, next year 120 people. We outgrew that, we moved to Romer, 200 people, 250 people. Last year we've been a B'nai Yeshurun, over 400 people. Who was the chazin that put that into motion? It was Chaim. With his unique flavor, and his unique passion, and his excitement, even for something that many people are very frightened of that gift of the tshuva process, of the chance to start new and to grow and to be inspired and to come to the Yom Noram. A few years ago on Yom Kippur, I shared a story. And again, it's a story that I never had the opportunity to share with Chaim, but it's one that I know that he would love. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch by Yom Kippur that there's an extra mitzvah to have a lot of light. A lot of light in the shul. It's recorded, Siman Tov Reish Yud. And it's based on a pasuk in Yeshaya that we try to be mechabe to Yom Tov. And the ways that we mechabe to Yom Tov is through light, through ksus naki, and to have nice clothing, to have festive meals. On Yom Kippur, when we don't have the opportunity to eat, so we have to supplement. We have to add other elements to enhance the kavod of the Yom Tov. So there's dafkan in there should be a lot of light. I check the lights, make sure all the light bulbs are in place, everything is illuminated. Create an atmosphere for Yom Tov. So I read a story that Rav Ron Yitzchak Eisenman from Psaic, he said, you know, one year was before Yom Kippur, and he wanted to make sure that the shul would be properly illuminated for the Yom Noran. He has a big shul, tall ceilings, kind of like the room that we're in there, and the Beis Knesses we're in right now. And he said he noticed that there were a few light bulbs that were out in the ceiling. I always wondered how they changed the bulbs here. Don't look, there's one or two that could use a little chizuk. So he describes how the only way to change the bulbs, you had to go up to the roof and enter into this tiny little narrow crawl space in the roof, and then lower yourself down to be able to change the bulb. He said, needless to say, it was not the job that the custodians were, you know, fighting over. But Rabbi Eisman says his son Aryeh liked this job very much. Whenever they needed to change a bulb, Aryeh was there. He'd go up there, adventuring, climbing up very carefully, of course. So Rabbi Eisman says to him, you know, I noticed a couple of the lights are out. I want to make sure that they're in place for Yom Kippur. Okay, he's very excited. Task at hand. He goes to the shul president to ask him to make sure that the bulbs are in stock. They go to the storage room, they check, they're out of bulbs. So the president looks into it, are able to order it, not in time. Okay, very disappointed. It's not going to be that proper illumination for Yom Kippur. Okay, the show will go on. But he told his son Aryeh already about changing the bulbs. He was all excited. So he said, no, at least let's get the process started to show that we made our effort. At least climb up and take down the burnt out bulbs. Take down the burnt out bulbs. At least that way, you know, we'll remember after Yom Tov that this is something we need to take care of. Okay. So he said his son Aryeh comes home that day. And he says to him, did you take care of you took out the bulb? So he says to his father, he says, not only did I take out the bulb, I replaced it with two new ones. So he says, what do you mean? I spoke to the president. He said, we were out in the storage room. We didn't have any bulbs left. So he said, his son with a huge smile on his face turned to him. And he said to him, when I went up into the crawl space, I noticed that there were two bulbs that I had left there from last time I was up there changing the bulbs. So when I got in there, I removed the bulbs and I replaced them with new bulbs. Such a gewaldic story. A person thinks they're out of light. There's not more light to be found. I know what I'm able to accomplish in my Avodas Hashem. I know how bright I'm able to shine. How much chiyus I can inject. V'chai b'hem. I'm comfortable with the first shot. I'll give some of my energy to Torah and mitzvot. That's already a very special thing. And then sometimes a person says, I'm going to go into that little crawl space. I'm going to look inside myself. I'm just going to go in there, not knowing exactly what I'm going to find. And when a person goes in, all of a sudden you discover this reservoir of light that you never knew existed. To think of ourselves, to think of our neshamas, almost like a Shabbos light. The light is always on the inside. It's just a question of how much you're going to turn the outside, how much you're going to move the body, how much you're going to allow that inside light to shine outwards. And when we look inside of ourselves, when we believe that there's a chelek elokam imal, that there's a piece of the divine kiviyachol inside of ourselves, when we believe that every mitzvah is a ner mitzvah, and every word of Torah is a Torah or, then a person uncovers that reservoir of light. And that inner beauty of Yiddishkeit shines forth. And a person is able to be so much more alive. with his Torah and mitzvahs. And that's the way that Chaim is. That's the Chaim Yisachar that I remember. The Chaim Yisachar that I miss very much. And the Chaim Yisachar that I hope will all continue for many years to be inspired by. I want to conclude with a little piece from Rav Gedalia Shor, the Or Gedaliyahu, the very last piece that's printed in the Mo'adim volume from the great Rosh Yeshiva from Torah Vadas, Rav Gedalia Shor. And it's a hesped that he had for the fourth Ger Rebbe, the Beis Yisrael. Couldn't have been more appropriate to find such a passage. He quotes from the Baal Tanya. The Baal Tanya writes, "Bigeras HaKodesh," that there's a lashon that we find in Chazal. Shavok chayim l'kol chay. Shavok chayim l'kol chay. That we say sometimes about a tzaddik, about a particularly inspiring personality who's no longer with us. Shavok chayim l'kol chay. That he's left life for those who are still amongst the living. Now this is the direct quote from Rav Gedalia Shor's Hesped, who was recorded from the tapes that he gave for the base Yisrael. Shatzadik bepulosav bezeh olam hu malei chiyus. A tzaddik, a righteous person in this world, is filled with chiyus. He's a living embodiment of vachaybe. He's trying to find those reservoirs of light inside of himself. Hachiyus shal tzaddik beemunaso yichya. The chiyus of the tzaddik who lives with emuna. Rav Matal Pogromansky once explained, what does it mean v'tzaddik beemunaso yichya? What does it mean to live with emuna? It means that I breathe emuna, and I eat emuna, and I sleep emuna, and I walk emuna. That every part of my life is made up of emuna. Hachiyus shal atzadik b'emunaso yechya. Hachiyus shaba mishal heveska. Hachiyus, a certain energy, a certain life that comes from what? From a shal heveska, from a flame of godliness that's burning strong inside of a person. Hachiyus me'asiyas mitzvos b'chiyus k'mo shekasov v'chaybeh. A certain energy that comes from the performance of Torah and mitzvos, as expressed by the pasuk, again in Achrei Mos v'chaybeh. And those things that righteous person, that Eved Hashem, struggled and fought to do with tremendous energy, vehigin al hador, and he protected over the generation through that avoda, shavak chayim l'kol chay. What does the expression shavak chayim l'kol chay mean? Shelachol mi sherotze l'chayos ulizdabek b'drachav shel atzadik shavak atzadik l'chayos. Anyone who wants. Anyone who wants has the opportunity to come, to continue to sign up. That when that tzaddik, when that person who is the embodiment of that value, of living a life of a chai b'hem, of that shalheveska, of that burning flame inside, of that spirit of excitement, of what it means to be a Jew, serves with a great depth of usvartem lachem, an inner illumination. He leaves over, so to speak, that legacy, l'kol chai, to anyone who wants. To anyone who wants to continue that mission, Hashem Yisbarach Yitain Sheyizdabchu B'Drachav Shel Atzadik Kadosh Baruch Hu, should give us the strength to attach ourselves to the ways of that righteous person. Uvizeh Yeshavak Chayim L'Kol Chay, and then that Chayim will continue to live through the Chay, through the Chiyus that every one of us takes upon ourselves to fill that void and to continue that legacy. So Kadosh Baruch Hu should help us. Our Chayim Yisachar left us with a lot of unfinished work. I can tell you, anyone who's interested, there's plenty of projects still on the table that I'd be happy for you to take over. But I hope that in his chus, that in his merit, that every single one of us, as time goes on, and as it gets harder in some ways to remember, to continue to live with that passion, to continue to live with that creativity for Avodas Hashem, that excitement for Avodas Hashem, that thoughtfulness in Avodas Hashem, the genuineness in Avodas Hashem. And then Amir Hashem, Chaim Yisachar, and Yechiel Zedel Dov, smile down upon us. He'll be a Melech Yosher for Klal Yisrael, and in that way we'll follow in his footsteps to the Gula Shleim of Meher B'Aminu.